Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Daily Journal. We're talking all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. Logan, how are you, man?
Doing good. We're recording this on a Wednesday, and I need to make a grocery store run. I was telling John Pitts, our boss, on Twitter this afternoon that it's gotten slim pickings around here. I ate a hot dog sandwich. Didn't even have any hot dog buns. Had to stick it between two pieces of loaf bread. So it's time to go to the grocery store around here. So I'm going to try to get that done. And if you're listening to this on Thursday, hopefully I've gone to the grocery store and Parrish has landed safely in California.
Well, if you're listening on Thursday, it's because we've taped on Wednesday, because Thursday is a travel day with Ole Miss going out to Cal. We're going to talk about that game in a minute. Hey, folks, before we get there, I want to remind you about a couple of other podcasts to check out. Be sure to look for The Memo, our news podcast for all things Northeast Mississippi, with Derek Russell and Chris Kiefer. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. And look for Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs every Wednesday with Dalton Middleton and Brad Locke, another podcast of the Daily Journal. Before we get into football, a little NCAA news. Ole Miss had its Committee on Infractions hearing Monday and Tuesday of this week. The committee did not require 3 days. They had reserved the hotel space for 3 days there in Covington, Kentucky. They went through the 21 violations in 2 days. Leo Lewis was there. There were some semantics about how he got into the room. They kept him out of view. Logan, you may have more to say about that, but the bottom line is Ole Miss is now waiting 6 to 8 weeks before they will know how the Committee on Infractions will rule on this case, what additional penalties, if any, the Rebels will face. I believe they will face some. I think that's pretty much a given, but we'll see. That's coming in 6 to 8 weeks. There's been some talk, Logan, at least I've heard this rumor, maybe you have heard it, the NCAA releasing that information before the Egg Bowl, close to the Egg Bowl, maybe the middle of November. But I've heard that that they may delay that announcement and not announce that news until after the Egg Bowl for security reasons. I've heard that Mississippi State is already planning to have more security officers at the Egg Bowl this year. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard anything about that. And that may be true, and I just haven't heard it, but I haven't heard anything like that. But I can confirm that Leo Lewis is back in Starkville and assumingly back practicing, because I saw him in the lobby yesterday. I was conducting another interview with Tolando Cleveland, and I looked over Tolando's shoulder, and Leo was coming in from the cafeteria part back towards the meeting room. So I at least laid eyes on him yesterday. He was back in Starkville, and Dan Mullen was asked about him earlier on the teleconference and said he's back practicing and practicing well. But other than that, could not comment on major violations at another institute.
Well, I tell you, with the committee getting through 14 of the violations on Monday, I thought that maybe we would see Ole Miss interim coach Matt Luke at practice on Tuesday when I was there. But he was not there. He was still in Covington, Kentucky, and Ole Miss went through practice with coordinators Phil Longo and Weston McGriff leading the way. Let's get on to some football, Logan. Let's start with Mississippi State, because they get into SEC play this week, hosting LSU, and States look good in 2 wins offensively and defensively. I'll let you talk more about that. LSU just kind of following along. It looks to me, Logan, like they have won, but they haven't really been impressive all the way through. Now, they started out with that 27-0 shutout of BYU, but I think a lot of people were looking for more from the LSU passing game in that season opener and didn't see it. I know you know a little more about the Tigers. you can get us there. But first, tell me about 3rd and 93 or whatever that was.
Parrish, that was probably the most bizarre football game I've ever covered. And, you know, that kind of just put the icing on the cake. It was already 57-14 at that point that it came along. But during that ball game, 3 blocked extra points. One of those was returned for, the 2-point conversion. 2 of those were on Mississippi State's part. They had 2 extra points blocked. Tucker Day ended up getting replaced as the PAT kicker by Jace Christman. Jace Christman came on in the second half, made all 4 of his attempts. So it's kind of a PAT kicker controversy here in Starkville right now. We'll have to kind of see who they tried out there Saturday if they score a touchdown. And Parrish, the nose guard, scored 2 touchdowns in that ball game. Jeffrey Simmons blocks a punt. He had already blocked an extra point earlier in that game. Ends up blocking a punt. Recovers it in the end zone for a touchdown. And then later on in the fourth quarter, I think it was the fourth quarter, maybe you know, it was the third quarter, Gary Green had his 2nd strip sack of the ball game. Jeffrey Simmons scoops it up and outruns everybody 90 yards for a touchdown. So the nose guard scored 2 touchdowns in that ball game. And then you've got the weird way that it started. I mean, Louisiana Tech jumped out to a 9-0 lead right off the bat. You know, Nick Fitzgerald did not play well early in that ball game. Completed just, you know, I think 1 of his first 8 passes. One of them was picked off and returned to the 2-yard line. That was one of the touchdowns that Mississippi State gave up. That was the first touchdown they'd given up all season on a 2-yard run. So early circumstances in that ball game that, and then Mississippi State just battled back and seemed like they just took over the game and just never let up from that time on. But getting back to the 3rd and 93, it was late in the ball game, as I mentioned, and, you know, there's a bad shotgun snap. I think 5 different players tried to pick up the ball 6 different times as they were just continually kicking it downfield and kicking it downfield. And eventually Louisiana Tech jumps on it at their own 7-yard line. Sets up 3rd and goal with 93 yards to go. They hit a pretty long play. It was 20-something yards and had to punt on 4th and goal. And you just don't see that very often. And it's one of the more comical type of plays that you would see. And, you know, it just kind of capped off the end of what was just a crazy ball game.
I tell you what, when I saw that the nose guard had scored 2 touchdowns in that game, it made me think of a David Cutcliffe Ole Miss team that went to Arkansas back, I think this was 2002, and I saw Arkansas kick off twice and twice score touchdowns on its own kickoffs with Ole Miss fumbling on special teams. But that's not something that you often see once, a team kicking off and scoring a touchdown on its kickoff, but Arkansas did that twice in that game. I read a little bit about that MSU and Louisiana Tech game, Logan, the next day from Teddy Allen, who is kind of the in-house columnist at Louisiana Tech. And he's a guy that I knew from the Monroe newspaper when I was in school. And Teddy's column started off with what a wonderful day it was with, the near sellout and everybody in blue for Louisiana Tech. And the fast start for Tech, and then everything just went against Tech, and the theme of the column was that the ball just bounced the other way and bounced Mississippi State's way for like the rest of the night. And I'm thinking, well, you know what? I know that there were some breaks that went State's way in that game, but I think what probably went more State's way in that game was talent on defense. And maybe just talent across the board and some depth that SEC teams have that the group of 5 schools don't always have. Well, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was across the board. Mississippi State was the better team Saturday. And there were some breaks that went Louisiana Tech's way. I mean, that last touchdown that they scored with 15 seconds to go left in the ball game. I watched the replay yesterday, and the ball was snapped a good 2 to 3 seconds after the play clock had expired. So I don't know if it was the officials just saying, hey, you know, it's 57-14, let's let them play, and they end up scoring a touchdown. And even the catch was bobbled, and, you know, they had to review the play, and I don't know if the guy had possession of it or not. But, you know, even the couple of touchdowns Mississippi State's they've given up two touchdowns all year, and both of those were questionable. Like I said, one of them was a 2-yard run off an interception, and then that last play, with the a lot of walk-ons on the field, third and fourth team defensive guys playing out there, and even that, they almost didn't give up that one. But they've looked really, really good on that side of the ball. Even the game was over at halftime this past Saturday, Parrish. The new press box that they've built, they did a lot of facility upgrades at Louisiana Tech since the last time I was there back in 2008. They've poured a lot of money into that stadium, and it seemed like they've really advanced that program as far as a facility standpoint. But that new $18 million press box, which is really nice, by the way, you could see just a line of taillights leaving that campus at halftime. I mean, the game was over at that point. It really wasn't much more to watch at that point. And, by the time that fourth quarter got there, that place was, it was deserted.
Well, I tell you what, let's talk Ole Miss a little bit now. The Rebels coming off a 45-23 win over Tennessee Martin. And, the final score there sounds about like what you might expect in an FCS buyout game at home. But the Rebels really did struggle with a slow start, very different from the Tennessee Martin visit 2 years ago in 2015 when Ole Miss won 76-3. Tennessee Martin's not a bad team in the Ohio Valley Conference. Picked to finish second there this year. But, they came out inspired. And look, they exposed Ole Miss's run defense. And this was such a problem area for the Rebels last year when they gave up almost 250 yards a game, 246.3, ranking number 120 out of 128 FBS teams. This FCS team with a junior college transfer, Ladarius Galloway from Colin, an Indianola native, guy runs for almost 200 yards. He had run for 157 the week before against Division II Clarion, and he comes to Ole Miss and runs for 188, getting close to 200. And really, he was the guy that Tennessee Martin leaned on the entire game. He moved the pile. He had some really tough inside runs. And in the first half of the first quarter, the Rebels just weren't getting off blocks. And they got better as the game went along. They got off blocks and they made some plays, but still – the tackling across the board was really poor and something they're really trying to work on this week. I called that game almost to the final score, Logan. I had Ole Miss winning 45-19 in my predictions post last week. I thought that that Tennessee Martin would score some points, and they did there. But I didn't think Ole Miss would need the entire first half to establish control in the game, but they did. Now the Rebels are 2-0 going to Cal. The week two game against Martin was a little bit of a step back, I thought. I thought the season opener went about as well as it could go for Ole Miss against South Alabama. You could see that they need to work on some things defensively. You can see that they need to get better in the running game. And those two things are still in place after week two. The run game did not improve against Tennessee Martin. The defense, I thought, took a step back. But in that opener against South Alabama, I thought there was reason for excitement for this Ole Miss team, particularly with how the defensive line played. Tackling was a little bit better. They just made more plays defensively earlier in the game against South Alabama. And that they just did not do that in week two. Maybe it had something to do with the 11 a.m. start. Maybe they were overlooking the FCS opponent. Bottom line is this team needs to be 2-0, and they are 2-0 going to Cal, where they have a chance to win Saturday night. It's a 9:30 Central Time start on ESPN. Second time in Ole Miss history that they will play in California. If they need to be 3-0 coming back from that game to really, I think, have a chance to exceed the expectations that many have for the program this year. They're going to get up to 6 or 7 wins. They need to get 3 in these first 3 games because the schedule is about to shift gears when they come back. They'll come back from Cal with an open date on the 22nd, but then they'll follow that up with 2 straight trips to Alabama, 1 to Alabama, the next to Auburn. So those are coming up quickly on the schedule. So this team really needs to come back from Cal with the win, and they are quite capable of doing that. You know, Cal is also 2-0, but just like Ole Miss, struggled against an FCS opponent at home last week against Weber State. Now, it took Cal longer to control that game. In fact, the Bears were behind 20-17 going into the fourth quarter, and finally were able to assert themselves and put it out of reach and win 33-20. A lot of similarities between these teams. Cal also isn't very good defensively. This could be a high-scoring game. But that's where the Rebels are after two games. Couple of things, Logan, that I see from this team right now, offensively and defensively. One, on offense, the wide receivers are what we thought they are. They're very good. A.J. Brown has stood out at the beginning, the sophomore from Starkville. He's kind of separated himself from the pack, and you can almost see a little more chemistry developing there, a little more trust from Shea Patterson to A.J. Brown. But, you know, so many of these receivers are capable of big games. And, in fact, against Tennessee Martin, not only A.J. Brown, but also DeMarcus Lodge had more than 100 yards receiving. But Brown has been so physical after the catch, just like they thought he would be when they put him as that slot receiver. He's got three touchdown catches in two games of more than 50 yards, became the first Ole Miss receiver in school history to have two catches in the same game of more than 70 yards. That was against South Alabama. So the receivers are what we thought they would be, and A.J. Brown is very good at football, and I think we're going to see more from D.K. Metcalf as defenses begin to focus on Brown and begin to shift some of their resources in other places. A couple of other notes on the offense. The running backs have not been much more than average in the first two games. Jordan Wilkins is not running like he was at the end of 2015 when he was just running over people and getting a lot of yards after contact. We haven't seen much from the running game to this point. Shea Patterson, he's much better, as you would expect, than he was in the last three games of 2016 when he was thrust into that role as starter when his red shirt was taken off, and true freshman getting the win at Texas A&M, but the Rebels were not able to follow that up against Vanderbilt or Mississippi State. Patterson looks like a different player, more poise. You know, I got some complaints, Logan, on Twitter because I was critical of his accuracy against South Alabama. He completed 80%, but he wasn't placing the ball to the receivers like he wanted to. You could see the receivers having to work to make some of those catches more than they should have. And when you have receivers doing that, it limits what they can do after the catch. Patterson was much better against Tennessee Martin, showed a lot of poise in the pocket, had a lot of time to throw, and he hit his receivers again. He really looks like a different quarterback. You know, I said last year that making your debut with only three games to go is not ideal, but I did believe it was going to benefit Shea Patterson, and it looks like it has. Defensively, we've talked about the run defense. Not any improvement there from last year, it looks like, so far. We'll see what this week at Cal brings. Josiah Coatney has kind of been the Rebels' best defensive lineman, a guy who redshirted last year, a junior college transfer. And they're getting some okay play there at the tackles from Benito Jones and Breland Speaks. But really, Coatney has been the one who has stood out with 11 tackles in two games. So a really good start for Josiah Coatney. And, you know, linebacker play, we're just not seeing what we need to see from the Rebels there. And I think you're going to see a new starter there with Dietrich Bing Dukes getting back with the first team. At least he was in practice on Tuesday. Pass defense, we still don't know because the Rebels, you know, haven't forced teams to pass much. Tennessee Martin had so much success on the ground, they only attempted 17 passes. One other note on the defense, Logan, Marquise Haynes went into this season needing only two sacks and six tackles for loss to become the Ole Miss career leader in both of those categories. I thought, well, he could get those records early in the season. But because the Rebels haven't forced teams to pass, Haynes to this point has only a half sack and a half tackle for loss. So I think he'll get those records as the season goes on, but it's not been a fast start, at least in those big playmaking categories for Marquise Haynes. He's still getting the job done along the line of scrimmage. He's a good tackler on a team that doesn't have a lot of good tacklers. But as far as Haynes's climb up the charts in those categories, he's still climbing.
Yeah, you know, looking at Mississippi State's offense, they don't have the huge receiving numbers that Ole Miss does. They've kind of spread the ball around and really just haven't had to throw the ball just a whole lot this season so far, just because of the lopsided score. And, I mean, their leading receiver is Donald Gray with 7 catches for 76 yards and a touchdown. I mean, they just really haven't had to throw the ball just a whole lot and, you know, really haven't been able to see how much Nick Fitzgerald has improved in that regard. I mentioned earlier that he had that slow start at Louisiana Tech. Now, he finished that game 11 out of 12 and looked really good throwing the ball after that slow start. He had a touchdown right before the end of the first quarter to a wide open Jordan Thomas in the end zone, and that kind of just jump-started him a little bit. And he played well the next quarter and a half. You know, he came out midway through the third quarter, giving way to the true freshman, Keaton Thompson. But they've ran the ball pretty well. Really haven't had to just continually hand the ball off to the same running back. You know, Aris Williams went over 100 yards against Louisiana Tech. Nick Fitzgerald went over 100 yards on the ground against Louisiana Tech. So, you know, you really don't know exactly what the offense is capable of because we haven't had to see them for four quarters just yet. I mean, they've played so well and put up a lot of points and put the games away so early that, you know, I think this week we'll know a lot about this offense. Right now, they're leading the SEC in scoring offense. They're leading the SEC in rushing offense. And they're going against an LSU team that leads the SEC in rushing defense and total defense. So it's going to be good on good, and we'll have to kind of see if Nick Fitzgerald, if LSU is indeed able to shut down the running game, is Nick Fitzgerald's arm good enough? Is his accuracy good enough to overcome, you know, the lack of running game? And you know, that's we'll kind of learn a little bit more, or a lot more about this Mississippi State team this week as they get into SEC play. LSU's coming in. Mississippi State traditionally hasn't played LSU very well, but they have played them good over the last couple of years. It's been a one possession game the last 3 or 4 meetings against LSU, and it's no longer a blowout type of game. It's a game that Mississippi State is capable of winning. You go back to a couple of years ago, the last time when LSU came to Starkville in 2015, Mississippi State is set up for a game-winning field goal. They get a delay of game, pushes that field goal back for 5 yards. And I mentioned earlier just how bad Mississippi State's field goal kicking has been over the last few years. You know, makes it, you know, a 52-yard field goal, I believe it was, by Devin Bell, and he misses it. And, you know, Mississippi State loses that ball game. But it was a close ball game throughout. And probably I'm expecting another close ball game this week. I know both teams have kind of struggled with field goal kicking early on in the season. So if it comes down to that, it could get pretty interesting. But like I said, it's going to be good on good, you know, Mississippi State's offense versus a very good very good LSU defense. Mississippi State's played very well on defense as well. And then, of course, LSU has one of the top running backs in the league and Darius Geis back there. And you know, on the defensive side of the ball, LSU is going to get Arden Key back this week. He hasn't played at all this season. He's one of the SEC's top pass rushers. So Mississippi State's tackles will definitely have their work cut out for them, trying to keep him off of Nick Fitzgerald. If they are, you know, to try to get the ball downfield, passing the ball, you know, they're going to have to keep Arden Key off of number 7 and give him time to throw.
Well, a name for Ole Miss fans to remember in this game against Cal this week is Patrick Laird. He is the Bears' number 2 running back. Their number 1 running back is out with an injury sustained in the Weber State game. But this guy, Patrick Laird, I think could be a difficult matchup problem for Ole Miss unless they improve their tackling. He's a physical runner, 6 foot, 220. He's a former walk-on, Logan, and really kind of an interesting story there from Cal. Had a huge game against Weber State. It is an FCS opponent, but he rushed for like 190 yards, 3 touchdowns. So that's a guy. Of course, anybody's running back right now could be a difficult matchup for Ole Miss. I am interested to see if the Rebels can improve in their tackling and run defense, and if they can begin that this week. But this guy in particular, just looking at what he's been able to accomplish, looks like a tough physical inside runner. In fact, Wesley McGriff singled him out in the press conference earlier this week, the Ole Miss defensive coordinator, pointing out that Patrick Laird could be a matchup problem for the Rebels in this game. I guess, Logan, the big question in week three of college football in the area is, will Ed Orgeron go for it on fourth and one in Starkville? You know, the last time he was the head coach against Mississippi State there in Starkville, he went for it on fourth and one, didn't get it. This is back in 2007, and that completely changed the momentum of the Egg Bowl that year. Mississippi State comes storming back and wins the game. And Ed was actually asked about that in his press conference at LSU this week, and he said that he thinks that he will punt this time.
Yeah, you and I were both at that ball game, and you know, if you remember, that Mississippi State was dead in the water offensively and defensively in that ball game. Just had no life at all, and then they make that fourth down stop, and it just shifted the entire momentum of that ball game to Mississippi State's sideline, and they were able to storm back, and that was the end of Ed Orgeron at Ole Miss, and the next year was the end of Sylvester Croom at Mississippi State. So, that game can turn on a dime, and it did that day. And another thing that I wanted to mention that I forgot to earlier was Malik Deer, Mississippi State's wide receiver that tore his ACL back in the spring. He's been back practicing this week. Still a game time decision. He's still listed as questionable going into this weekend. Dan Mullen said he'll make that decision either Friday or early Saturday morning whether he will play. But you know, if he's able to play, that's a huge boost for Mississippi State. He's their second leading receiver coming into this year, playing that slot receiver type of guy, you know, bowling ball type of guy. He's kind of got that short, stocky, low to the ground type of build, and he's tough to bring down in the open field. So if they're able to get a few plays out of him this season or even this weekend against LSU, then I think that could do Mississippi State some good.
And on the injury front for Ole Miss, the Rebels could get tight end Dawson Knox back for this game. This would be his first game of the year. A guy they really liked in camp, himself a walk-on, hasn't played a lot of football beyond special teams, but could make his debut against Cal. I don't know about freshman cornerback D.D. Bowie. He was going to be evaluated this week. He may or may not be available at Cal. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, Everything Northeast Mississippi with Chris Kiefer and Derek Russell. That comes to you every Wednesday and Friday. Look for Prep Rally for all your high school sports needs with Dalton Middleton and Brad Locke. That comes to you every Wednesday. And Logan and I will be back with you next week for another edition of Double Coverage.